Hey, welcome to the podcast. This is an... Hi, welcome to the podcast. My name is Tim Andrews, and this interview that's coming up originally aired Saturday night, this past Saturday, which was the 16th, on 95.5 WSB. It was edited down. What you're going to get in this podcast version is the entire conversation I had with Phil Hendry. The name of the movie, again, is Hendry. It is available now to watch on video on demand. And you can get it on Apple and YouTube. You can rent it, or you can buy it and own it forever, or you can order the DVD. I don't know where you can get that from, but you could find it, I'm sure. But Phil was really generous with his time. So you get in this interview me sort of fanboying and being goofy and just talking about cool things with a guy that I've admired for a long time. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Thank you again, Mr. Phil Hendry. Now, on with the show. Welcome back home to WSB, where it all, well, didn't really all start here, but you did work here. When did you work here, and how long did that last?
I was at WSB from the spring of 92 to the spring of 93, a year.
A year.
And that was my first major market with the show that I do, actually what I consider to be the only really show that I did, which started in Ventura. My very first move to a major market was from Ventura, California, to WSB in Atlanta.
WSB, welcome south, brother. Did the audience just freak out or what?
It's hard to know, man, because SB put me, I imagine they did. It happened at every station I was on. But Jim Ashbury, who was the program director at the time, kept me sheltered from all of that stuff. Bob Green was also there. These are guys that I worked with later. I worked with Bob in Miami. So they were all fans. And they kept, if there was any bad reaction, it was kept well away from me. What I found as I progressed in my journey there, we developed a fan base in Atlanta, a great one, and wonderful fans, wonderful people that liked what we did. But the origins, yeah, all stations that I first went on, Tim, were hostile. the audience reaction was insane. You know?
Yeah. Well, I love it.
One thing, just to add one thing. When I got to SB, the Rodney King thing was happening.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a super, super news-charged period there in the spring of 92 where they just had the police beating of Rodney King, and naturally we turned it into comedy. I'm not certain that was smart, but that's what we did. So,
well, how could you not? I mean, you've taken a lot of things over the years and made them – and pretty much just said, hey, listen, you know, there has to be some levity in this. There has to be some funny stuff going on.
Yeah, your timing has to be right.
Yeah.
You know, you don't immediately want to jump into the comedy pool when people are still kind of afraid. But by the time I got to Atlanta, the situation in Los Angeles was about 3, 4, 5 months old, and it was being rehashed. I think what happened was that in 92, I think that was the trial. I don't remember the timing of the events, but I think that was a trial. And then, of course, there was rioting in the city.
Right.
So by the time I got to Atlanta, my very first time on the air, my very first night on the air in Atlanta, I was a German. I affected a German accent. Yeah, well, you know, this is important. The police have to have free rein, you know, to go ahead and crack heads if they have to. And, of course, that responded. Resonated very well with the caller base.
When that was going on, I was in my apartment in college just watching CNN and getting stoned. So that's the very...
That's it. Yeah, that's all you can do. That's all a man can do.
That's
just
right.
Just sit and get stoned sometimes, yeah.
Don't you want to watch Next Generation? Afterwards. So when you came back to Atlanta on WGST, syndicated through Premiere, your fan base must have been super excited.
I think so, yeah. And I came back to Atlanta periodically for morning show boot camps that Don Anthony would have, or would come back for a variety. There were a few radio events happening in Atlanta in the subsequent years that I would come back to, and always had people. I mean, I fell in love in Atlanta. I had a girlfriend in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I came back to periodically. You know what, man? When I left Atlanta, I left Atlanta because I got canned. So let's start with that.
Yeah.
I had to split Atlanta. But I was sorry to go because I thought it was a very hip market in terms of culture. Conservative socially, I mean, everybody was buttoned down and church going. But when it came to their comedy, people were wide open. So
yeah.
It was good.
Yeah. One time you were doing a boot camp and you were crammed in some little studio. in the hallway, and I just kept walking past the door. I was the promotions director at a different station. I just kept walking. Phil Hendry's in there. Phil Hendry. So finally, I got the balls to open the door, and I'm like, "Hi, Mr. Hendry. It's nice to see you." And then I walked away.
Oh, that probably scared me. I probably crawled out of the desk or something.
But that's how I used to be. And when I do this show, I've been lucky enough to bounce around, and then finally I'm on a daily show here where I just do my stupid voices and stuff. But I get to do this interview show, and when I saw that this movie's coming out, by the way, I've run this interview through my head for about 5 years. I want to talk to Phil Hendry someday. I want to talk to Phil Hendry. So,
well, you should have a pretty good list of questions, Tim.
Yes,
or
I do.
Comment, the combination thereof. Yeah.
Well, the goal when you're talking to people that you are a huge fan of is to not be fanboy, to not be. But you know, sometimes it'll bleed through. So apologies in advance if it does.
Well, yeah, but I got to tell you, man, I did a Grace and Frankie episode of Grace and Frankie as an actor, and I'm on the same set downstage with Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
How are you not going to fanboy out? Everything was Mr. Sheen this, but he said, "Would you please call me Martin?" I said, yeah, you're right. And yeah. It was back to Mr. Sheen, you know.
Right.
Tell me about Apocalypse Now. Tell me about Marlon Brando. Tell me about, I didn't leave the poor man alone. And then Sam Waterston's there trying to work on his laptop, and I'm bugging him. So how many opportunities do we get, man?
We don't. You got to take them. You got to take them.
Yeah, and you just go ahead and until they tell you to just get lost.
I decided I'd push my nervousness on if I can get Dr. Demento, who was way before you in the hierarchy of, or in the timeline of my radio heroes. But
I worked for him, man. I was his engineer.
You were? Oh, my God.
I was Barry's engineer from... I got to get this right, man. From about 82 through, God, dude, a couple, 3 years.
Damn.
And I remember he was a wonderful guy, and his producer was Lindsay Guerrero, great guys to work for. And all the guests, Leon Redbone, you know, and Frank Zappa. And Redbone's in there going, how can I get a margarita? Is there a margarita anywhere? You know?
Yeah.
And Zappa was hysterical. So, yeah, it was a two-track session, so it was real easy to do, and everybody was easy going. But, yeah, for like 3-4 years, I was his – and I witnessed the birth of Weird Al Yankovic's whole thing, you know, as Barry was pushing his stuff. So,
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, he – I got on the show, I think in 1987 I called in, and my voice hadn't fully changed yet, and I was lucky to find that. So I play it all the time whenever I can. Will you play that for me?
That's great, man.
Ugh.
Sometimes I got to say, I hear myself younger, and I think I think we all have this experience. Is the tape running fast?
Yeah.
It sounds like it's you, but you're only talking like this. You're really, and I'm thinking the tape's got to be running fast because that can't possibly be, you know.
Yeah.
But that's us as young people, yeah.
And
the tape running fast.
I found a tape of myself doing this super pretentious show I did in college, and we played it on the air here on the show that I'm on, and it's tearing me to pieces. I'm like, I deserve this. You are about to enter the Tim Andrews zone or whatever the hell I called it. But
sure, yeah, everybody had one of those things going on, yeah.
But the documentary, they sent me a screener, so I sat out in my carport and chain-smoked watching it, and it was a very enjoyable experience. It's a movie that's perfect for the comedy fan and specifically for radio nerds like myself, just to watch your progression. And like I said, you know, the... Okay, I just lost my train of thought. Here we go. The other thing I wanted to try to not do is, and just to explain my experience with your show over the years, is quoting favorite lines. And when you watch a movie like that and you see other guys that you like a lot, like Bill Hader and Kevin Pollak, and they're quoting the same things that you like, Bill Hader being a big fan of Herb Sewell. That's pretty amazing to me to see that. And just the giddiness that he still has talking about that, because I still listen to those bits.
I mean, that's great, man, that Bill and all of these guys appreciate the comedy because, you know what, I will tell you, man, for many, many, many years in my early disc jockey days, I didn't think I was any good at all. I didn't know what I was going to do because I didn't want to spin records. And that hokey disc jockey humor shtick stuff, I didn't do well. And my instincts were really weird. And I have to say, if I learned one thing, if your instincts are weird, as long as they're legal, okay, if your instincts are really strange, if you're just a strange person, go with it, Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
Go with that. Put that on the air. Do it. Believe in it. don't let anybody argue with you. Be polite, be nice, be good, but don't let anybody air check you off of it, man. You know, that's who, I remember people sitting me down and saying, well, let's air check today, Phil. I said, you know, I with all due respect, I don't do air check meetings. If you don't like the show, I understand. You don't have to have me working for you, but I ain't sitting down and doing an air check meeting. I worked my ass off to get to where I am and to finally discover this truth about myself. So I had these weird instincts, Tim, and I finally just said, I'm not going to get anywhere in life until I just give full voice to this crap, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was pretty freaking weird, but it as soon as I did it, I knew that I was on a successful path.
And that's
that simple.
That's a good takeaway for people that are listening, that if there's something
right.
you're passionate about, whether it's radio or whatever
mm-hmm.
you do,
mm-hmm.
I didn't get that really until I was about 34 years old. I said, shit, whoops. I said, at least it's not live.
I was 38, man. I was 38. You got it younger than I did.
Yeah. And it just.
You know, Phyllis Diller, you know the comic Phyllis Diller?
Yeah, yeah.
She was a copywriter at a San Francisco radio station at the age of 39. And she said, I got to do something with my life. I can sit here doing copywriting. She didn't bust into stand-up until she was in her early 40s.
I didn't know that, but I just heard, yeah. I was listening to an old Gilbert Gottfried podcast, and he had Richard Lewis on. And and he was talking about he met Phyllis Diller, and she was older, and he told her this, something like that. I didn't know her age, though. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. That's the great takeaway. That's what I tell everybody. Go do it, man. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. People are going to make fun of you. People are going to tell you you suck. People are going to tell you to stop doing it. People are going to tell you. That's what happened to me. I was met with hostility in every market. And Minneapolis, you know, I told the guys this. Yeah, I was on the Greg Fitzsimmons podcast yesterday. When I worked at WCCO, and God bless Minneapolis, got great fan base there, and I met a lot. And Jim Asbury brought me up there, and I love him for that. But when I was at CCO, I never in my life had the experience of people on the air behind my back talking me down to advertisers. That happened at that radio station.
Oh, man.
And, yeah. And I don't give a you-know-what
yeah.
if anybody up there wants to counter that, because I know it happened. And I thought, that's the bottom of the barrel, man.
Yeah.
That's the bottom of the barrel. I can't believe that would happen. If you don't like me, you don't have to like me. You're going to try to sabotage me? That told me something. It told me that what I was doing was shaking up the order. I didn't want to do that. What I wanted was my listeners to enjoy me and to give me ratings so that I could make lots of money and go on and become a superstar or whatever the hell that is. You know, I didn't want to sit there and do battle with these jackasses. But as you move through life and you have your success and you have – You know you're on the path, man, when they try to rip you down. There's nothing more dangerous than success. There's nothing more dangerous, and people will be more hostile the more successful you get.
And even the people that are supposed to be a champion of you that you're working with, going around your back
yes,
and doing that.
That's the worst, man. But look, don't ever be bitter. Always be loving. Always be forgiving, and always say, it's good, it's cool, you don't like me, I understand, I'm moving on, and never, ever burn any bridges. So those are the big lessons I learned, man. Yeah. If you're loving the people, man, and you're good, and they can't hate you, man. You know, they can't, you know, because you're happy and you're enjoying your life and you're enjoying your art.
Yeah. I've worked with a lot of like main guys on shows that are complete idiots. I finally, the guy that hosts the show here, his name's Eric Von Hessler. He used to be with the regular guys out in LA and then here.
Mm-hmm.
And I
yeah.
just stayed friends with him and stayed close to him. And we've had a pretty mm-hmm. successful run here in the afternoon, and it's
great.
Just staying and doing what you believe in doing and pushing through it, and you know, and then making fun of Sean every day because we cut him back to 1 hour, you know. And
which Sean are we talking about? Just so I make sure I'm laughing at the right thing.
Well, I get a full hour every day from 3 to 4 p.m. anyway, and Linda doesn't care. And then they come back and they play me a tape delayed at 10 o'clock. I don't care. Doesn't matter anyway.
Okay.
That one.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
Who also has a cameo in the film, because he was at GST, I guess, when you were here.
He was at GST, and he actually called me, and he was a very nice man. He says, Phil, Sean Hannity, I'm on my way to New York. I said, great, I'm going to Minneapolis. That's great. You know? But he dug what I did. A lot of these cats, whatever the political stripe, liked what I did, because it was good. It's good radio art, you know.
Yeah.
But I got, you know, I'm a lib. I'm just a West Coast communist liberal. Who does believe in guns, though? So that's. In fact, I'm forming the Hollywood Gun Club, man. If you ever get out here, Tim, you can.
I can bring my gun. I'll bring it on the plane.
Us,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I have.
I've gone to actors and comedians who also like to shoot.
Listen.
But I. That was the great thing, and we sort of bridged the divide with comedy. because who doesn't like to laugh at some guy calling in to argue with a voice that doesn't really exist
yes.
about whether witches get sucked into the turbines or jets, you know? So
I remember distinctly that I had a roommate who listened to radio because he worked at night. And he would say to me, I was not yet in radio. He said, I know you listen to Art Bell to go to bed. You should listen to the show that's on before it. You'd like this guy. He's funny. Mm-hmm. And he didn't tell me anything else. So I tuned in on my way home from wherever I was, and I heard Bobby Dooley talking about making out, teaching her sons how to kiss. And,
oh, jeez.
And I get home. What? Go ahead.
What station was I? I didn't invent Bobby till L.A.
No, this was WGST, so this is late 90s.
Oh, okay. It was Syndicate. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So I get home, and I'm just listening to this on the radio, and I'm losing my mind, and I don't get out of my car. I wait for the commercial. Then I run into the house and put my radio on because people still had radios, and it just freaked me out, and he wouldn't tell me. He's like, oh, yeah, he has her on sometimes, and he knew, and I didn't know. And then I heard Vernon Dozier, and then I heard Steve Bozell, and I said, wait a minute. This guy's
the same guy.
Yeah. And he finally told me, but it just blew me away. And that's what got me hooked. And then I became a subscriber. You know, when you had that up and running, I became a subscriber. And I'm just downloading all my favorite bits. And the reason I'm getting to this is I've been in radio. I've been fired a lot. So I was up in Chicago auditioning to be a producer for Man Cow. And I forget the name of the company, TRN or whatever. And they flew me up there, and I got food poisoning. Because they put me in a walk-up hotel in Chinatown, no elevator, and I ate in Chinatown.
Oh, Lord.
And I got food poisoning, very bad food poisoning. So I had to leave my audition, and then I spent the next day and a half just listening to, like, fever dreams and listening to your bits, and that got me through
time
there.
Sounds horrible.
It was. It was very horrible. And
yeah.
I felt
yeah.
bad, but, I'm kind of happy I didn't get it because here I am doing what I'm doing, so...
If you can be on the microphone and be the star, there's no point in working behind scenes.
No, and I'm still working at that. Yeah. I'm still working at that. I'm in my 50s. I have a 3-year-old. If cigarettes don't kill me, then I'll make it. You know what I mean? You just got to keep pushing.
I gave up cigarettes at 57 with double pneumonia.
Oh, that's a good reason.
You don't want to have an illness or disease force you to quit. I was lucky. I got double pneumonia. Thank God I didn't get freaking... throat cancer, so
right.
It kicked my ass for a week, and that was the last cigarette I ever had.
Nice. You were a Marlboro guy, right?
I was a Marlboro, filtered Marlboro guy from the time I was, I started smoking when I was 14.
Yeah.
Well, you... 14, man. Yeah, but I gave up the smokes, and but you know what, man? Sooner or later, you gotta throw it all in, and you have to say, I'm doing this, and I don't know. I told myself, when I left disc jockey work and I started doing the talk show that I do, and it's you call it a talk show, but the performance art that I do, I told myself, I don't care where I wind up. I don't care if I get a job in Wampanoag, New York. I don't care if I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done this before. I've never expressed myself. So please, just give me a job.
Mm-hmm.
And by God, I got a job 40 miles up the road in Ventura. That's where I started. I didn't have to go back east or anything like that. I knew I was on the right path when I got a rejection letter from a big station in Philadelphia that started out with, this is the funniest thing I've ever heard, Phil. I can't hire you.
That's too funny.
This is good. Okay, I think I'm on the right track here. So
I always knew what program directors I could listen to when I'd say, hey, do you like Phil Hendry? And they'd go, oh, well, he's more of a radio person's radio. Okay, discount.
Okay, I can do you'd be surprised, man, at the program directors that we had. We didn't get it. I'd say to our affiliate guy, I go, what's not to get?
Right.
Well, they just don't get what... I think what he was saying was they don't get why I'm doing this kind of show and why they should put it on there, because they do a straight talk station. Why would they put a guy on that satirizes what they do? They didn't understand that. But
yeah. But you spend all day. Go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was going to say, I don't think we have in this business, and we never really had, people that championed art. Look, in movies they do, they give out Academy Awards. In literature they do, they give the Pulitzer Prize. In practically every other medium, they champion art and they champion the artist. Radio never really did.
No.
It always just saw us as an inconvenient filler between commercials and, And the other thing that really pisses me off, these guys are actually making us money. That really bugs me, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think that, I think radio, and it comes from the roots of radio having to survive post-war America. When television came along, it just destroyed radio's, you know, theatricality. And they had to scramble to make radio relevant. And they hired the disc jockey, the one guy in the studio with the records. And suddenly they saw magic being made, and they were saving God knows how much money doing it.
Yeah.
And so I think the radio mindset was, look at all the money we're saving with a disc jockey who plays all these records. And on top of that, he's funny. And on top of that, he's great on the stuff. This is great. And that was their mindset here on, from there on out, you know.
But to have the command of to own these airwaves, there's so many things you could do. But I think I think there's still WSB is a different animal completely from any place I've ever worked, because it was always rock stations, and they would say things like, well, this worked in Buffalo, or this worked in Tampa. Why don't you do this bit that they did in Tampa? And some of the shows I've been on were like, yeah, let's steal that idea. Or the other ones like, no, we're going to come up with our own stuff. This is dumb. And you know, and lucky enough to work with those people, because Eric, my boss now, even if it's a hint of somebody else's content, he's like, I don't want that. We can do our own stuff. So
that's great, man. That's the kind of, those are the people you want to surround yourself with, man. You know,
yeah.
Let's create some, let's do something, man. What hasn't been done before? What can we talk? We're local. We're in Atlanta. There's a million stories in Atlanta, just like in L.A., man. I was happy to get back to Los Angeles because I grew up here.
Yeah.
I know this town backwards and forwards, upwards and down. I know all of the names and all of the kooky, weird things, and there's never an end of material. I don't know, man. I don't know how to say it. I mean, if some people just were not meant to be performers.
No, they're not.
And yet the broadcast business, the radio business, gives them an opportunity to get on and
like the you know, we have a night host named Shelley Long. No, Shelley Winter, and not Shelley Winters. His name is Shelley Winter. He's a black conservative. He's on at night. He's a great guy, funny. Does a
love that name.
Laid back. Oh, I know. I always screw up. Hey, Shelley Long. Or no, wait. Yeah. You weren't in the Poseidon Adventure. You anyway.
Yeah.
So he's from Harlem. That's where he grew up. And he interviewed RFK. So the other day, my boss Eric says, I want you to do that. And so I'm doing RFK talking to him, and it's just the noises. And no other show would allow me to do that. And part of that, and I have to say this, is because I listen to you, and because I know, okay, this is improvising. This is just putting your feet on the gas and going. And a lot of times when I was doing character voices and stuff in the past, I had it in the back of my mind. Don't do anything that sounds like Phil Hendry, and don't.
Well, here's a tip, Tim. As much as I appreciate you listening to me, you probably ought to stop.
Yeah.
I don't mean that I don't like you, man. I love you for for doing it, but I don't listen to comics. I don't listen to comedians. I know a lot of comedians. I know a hell of a lot of comedians, and I've done stand-up and I do improv, but I don't listen to comics and I don't watch comedy shows. To quote the great Vin Scully, I don't want my point of view polluted. That's what he used to say about not listening to other broadcasters. I don't listen to play-by-play guys. But why? I don't want my point of view polluted, is the way he put it. And I think that's a very strong position to take. As much as I love comedy and support comics, I can't sit and listen to other comics for too much periods of time. Otherwise, I'll start to incorporate subconsciously what they do, and that drives me nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Know?
Quoting them or doing – yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah, so – you know.
After 9/11, I did not do Plane Go Boom, which is also one of my favorite bits of all time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Probably not a good thing to do. Yeah.
No, but mine got burned. They burned the tape. I was Osama bin Laden, and I called in and I said that it was David Copperfield who made them disappear, and then they got
yeah. Well, that's the thing. See, one of my favorite guys on the radio, Emperor Hudson, and I love Bob Hudson. He was a big influence on me. He worked at KRLA in Los Angeles in the 60s, a morning drive jock. And Bob Moore told me the story, and I don't want to speak out of school because I love and respect Bob Hudson, but we've all been fired. And he got on the air the morning of the Challenger explosion. Remember when the Challenger blew up in the 80s?
Oh, yeah, I was watching it on TV in school.
It was a shuttle.
Yeah.
He got on the air, and Bob told me this. And Bob, if I'm talking out of school, forgive me, but Bob told me he's driving to work that morning after the shuttle went up, maybe the next morning. And Bob Hudson said they had been freebasing Tang And okay, now funny today, extremely funny. And Bob says, to me this. He says the following like this: it was funny as hell. I knew I had to fire him. You know? It was funny as hell. I knew I had to fire him.
Yeah,
because the timing is just wrong, Jack. You know, it's not. Just not the right time to tell that joke.
No, that's a great joke. I got
it's a fantastic joke, and you know, God bless all of those poor people. Freebasing Tang, just today sounds really funny. You know, in terms of the what we all know about Tang. You know,
yes,
yeah. So you have to. You really gotta. You can't be so desperate to be funny that you just throw any shit on. Excuse my French. You throw anything on the air that. Seems funny to you and you think you're going to pull an audience with it. Well, no, sometimes you're going to really hack people up. I knew I made a big mistake when I was on the air and right after 9/11, and I said that I had my program director come on. I was doing his voice. Yeah, Phil, I can't come to work. Why is that, David? I've come down with anthrax. And, you know, and so you're kidding. Nah, it's just, all right. Well, it was so funny, and it was received so well, I tried it again in 2 weeks later with tuberculosis. Wrong. Anthrax is one thing. You got to sniff it somewhere, right? It's got to be laying around. Tuberculosis, dude, is airborne.
Yeah.
And I had to go on the air and say, you know what? It's just a joke. Sorry, it's a bad joke. I didn't mean it. You know?
Were you pressured to do political talk in the 2000s during the Bush era and the war era?
No.
Good.
No, not at all. Yeah. I just did out of my own accord because I was so pissed off over 9/11. And
yeah.
I didn't like what was going on. And I probably, if I had it to do over again, I wouldn't have been as political as I was. But I don't know, man. That was just me. Just me.
That was you.
Me. And David Hall, who was a great program director, said to me, well, you've earned the right. Go ahead. Give your opinion, man.
Hell yeah. And he's prominent in the movie. He's prominent in the movie. And I didn't know that he was real. I didn't know he was a real
guy. The real David Hall is a great guy and was one of the best programmers I ever worked for. So, you know, there's guys along the way. Jim Ashbury was one. Rich Galano in Ventura was another. David G. Hall, great GM. I worked for Bob Green in Miami. Wonderful guy.
How did
you find somebody suits?
How did he find time to be a radio programmer and also run a grocery store? I just don't figure that out.
Exactly. And that character is based on him.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah. My boss is Ken Charles. Do you remember him?
I remember Ken Charles. Was Ken in? Who was in Atlanta?
He was
not in Houston.
He was in Houston.
No.
He was in GST, yes. And then he was also in LA.
Yeah, Ken's a wonderful guy.
He was very happy that I was able to get the interview. He was like, well, I have his phone number and I have his email address. I said, it's a Hotmail address. Well, it'll work. Okay.
It'll work.
Yes. I don't think he changes his email, but I want to get back to the documentary real quick. I know you probably got to get running, but it comes to the part where we're talking about Janet Jackson's Super Bowl nipple and all the problems. Why did it cause problems for radio? Because shortly after that, you're looking at John Hogan and he's groveling in front of Congress. And the next thing you know, people are getting fired. You can't use mouth in the Ted from Beverly Hills jingle. And I remember it because our guys got fired. Our morning guys got fired and they put on a syndication. Well, they had a porn. They had a porn star. Come in named Devin Lane, and they said, we want you to record this porn, and we're going to play it backwards because the FCC can't find you. Well, they left the mics on when they were recording it, so they got fired. A Honda commercial. Bad idea.
Well, yeah, you know, I just talked with Greg Fitzsimmons about this yesterday. It just so happens, and it's a very important point. When Janet Jackson had the so-called wardrobe malfunction, and CBS was under fire, and they were run by a guy named Les Moonves. Les Moonves told the FCC to take it and stick it wherever they chose to, because, you know, it was a mistake. We didn't mean it to happen. So the FCC gets angry, and they call all the broadcasters back to Washington. TV broadcasters? No, radio broadcasters. What did we have to do with Janet Jackson? But they all ran back there like the good little boys and girls that they were. And this is radio, and this is one of the failings of radio, and one of the reasons why today radio is a shrinking industry, with all due respect.
Oh, I get
because
it.
Because they never stood up for talent. They never believed in the art of broadcasting. They just believed in holding onto their licenses and packing as many commercials into an hour as they could and taking the money and running. So all these guys go back to D.C. I get the call that weekend after my boss goes back to D.C. and gets the Riot Act run on him by the FCC. Don't you dare. I don't know what they told him. Don't ever have a woman show her nipple on your radio shows. comes back, and I have lunch with this guy. Phil, we just, the FCC is, you know, they're going to be fighting us, man. So, yeah, what's that got to do with me? Well, you have that jingle, Ted Bell's, we want to put our meat in your mouth. We need for you to beep it out. It's okay. So if most people would say, we want to put our beep in your mouth. We beeped mouth. We want to put our meat in your beep? Which I thought was pretty funny. But never again would I ever be able to hear that jingle without thinking, why did they come down on us? We didn't have the wardrobe malfunction.
No, it was dumb. And Stern, Stern left, and he went to satellite. And and now you, and I want people out there who are fans who may not know this, and I can't believe they wouldn't, but The World of Phil Hendry, on your website, you do a podcast every day where you're doing all these characters. And it's, to me, in some ways, I'm not saying that you know I'm a fan. Anyway, in some ways, it's funnier and crazier and
I agree.
Way looser than the radio show was, because it's just everybody at once. Oh, my God, it's great.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's a much funnier product. I mean, people will say, I heard the radio show back when he was goofing callers. So everybody wants to kind of position themselves as a OG when it comes to Phil's show. And I can dig that. But fact is, I think what we're doing now is much funnier. Although, you know, it doesn't have that awesome interactive thing. But what are you going to do, man? It doesn't exist anymore.
No,
you know,
it doesn't.
And I can't.
And plus, they'd find out.
I got in more trouble doing that show. With all the success we had in terms of today, it's kind of legacy. It's had a lot of influence, and we're very proud of that. But frankly, the show was every bloody day there was a problem. Somebody didn't like this. Somebody didn't like that. We were doing this. We were doing that. You wouldn't believe it, man. Mm. You know? And if you look back at our show, while we did have really strong pockets of listenership, Los Angeles, Miami, places like that, we had fluctuating ratings, constantly having problems with advertisers and constantly having problems with affiliation. So it wasn't yet today. People will say, what a great show. Really? Well, you should have been there, man.
Yeah. you should have been telling people.
It was a dogfight, man, all the way. Yeah.
Well, I have this is sort of a very personal question from a fan point of view. When one of my favorite impressions you did on the show of many, not just your characters, but was Art Bell. And I've always wondered if he reacted favorably to it.
Oh, he did. Yeah, Art loved it.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I met Art at a radio convention in Marina Del Rey. He was wonderful. He said, so, General Johnson Jameson, huh? Yeah, that's the guy. You know? Art dug it. I mean, he rolled with it, man. He knew that it was the ultimate compliment when you're being satirized. You know, Art was, in my opinion, an original.
Yes.
And I honor original people. And this is a guy that started every hour with a commercial. That was you never did that in radio, you know. But he started. It's the Art Bell Show, and here's Art. Now let me tell you about Keeneman Enterprises and the chili maker. You know, what the hell, man?
The urine tube.
exactly. You're supposed to jump right into the show.
Yeah. No.
And he did 40-minute phoners, man. That's like death.
Yeah.
Supposedly, but not with him.
Yeah, but before Ken got here. Ken Charles, the program director who gave me the show, said, well, people don't want to hear interviews. He said this to me. So if you do an interview, keep it at 10 minutes, keep it moving. And I said, okay.
Oh, God.
And then he quit. And immediately I'm like, yeah, I'm doing full hour interviews. And if they run longer, I'm doing a podcast, because I'm not interested in 10 minutes with somebody, you know, that I don't.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But the
over consultation can get really.
Oh, God.
Destructive.
You need a talent coach. All right. Well, I'm going to go back to the pizza shop now, because I can make a pizza. When you did Art Does Phil, by the way, that's probably the funniest. Well, again, to me, that's the funniest bit. And then weaving in and out of Art Bell and G. Gordon Liddy, who had almost the same voice, just amazing stuff. I want people to go
G. Gordon Liddy was like that. And G. Gordon Liddy, bless his heart. I mean, G. Gordon Liddy is whoever he is.
But
he actually read a list of Steve Bozell lawsuits on the air one day. Someone had given to him. He didn't know that Steve Bozell was a fake guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I didn't hear G. Gordon Liddy's show after that much. I'm not saying that we got him fired. But
no.
As a man named Steve Bozell in a place called Corona, California. Look at this. He's suing because he urinated in a public pool and it turned pink or something. I don't understand this.
Yeah. I threw my nephew off the roof.
When
I was 17 or 16, whatever, it doesn't matter. And I went to see him debate Abby Hoffman at Ithaca College in New York. And I was Mr. Lib, you know, I was like, yes. And I was the last person in line to ask him a question, and I gave him a Nazi salute, and I felt so embarrassed. So at fast forward.
You did? You gave Gordon Liddy a Nazi salute?
Yeah, I called him a fascist. You fascist! The whole crowd's laughing. And then fast forward, I'm at an NAB convention in New Orleans, and I see him walking, and I walk up to him, and I said, hi, Mr. Liddy. Hello. I said, you know, I said, the one time I met you, I did all this stuff, and I'm embarrassed. And I said, I've listened to your show. I said, I don't agree with you politically, but you talk about a lot of interesting things. And I'm a talk radio person. And he goes, well, it's nice to meet you, and I accept your apology, young man.
Yeah. It's good you did that, man. It's good that you did that.
Yeah, I had to cleanse it from my soul. I've carried embarrassment with me. Like, no, you fascist. Yeah, whatever.
I know, yeah. Yeah, it happened to me. This is a radio thing, but it happened the other day in the parking lot. I was going into PetSmart. And I'm walking, and this dude's backing in. He's one of these jackasses that backs in. This is a big thing here in California. You're backing into parking spaces there in Georgia?
All the time.
And I'm walking. He says, come on, man. I say, hey, dude, I'm walking here. Hey, hurry up. And I said, well, I'm walking. He says, and the guy says to me, shut the – well, I'm going to use a four-letter word. Can I?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll beep it.
The guy says, he goes, shut the fuck up. And I go, fuck you. So, and this was a big guy.
Yeah.
So I go walking into the store, and I come out with my shit, and I see his car, and I'm thinking, you know what? This is going to be a bummer on my head all day. I don't like having this kind of static with people. So I'm walking toward his car. And I'm looking at him, and he slows down. He's looking at me, and he won't roll his window down like he's afraid of me or something. I said, roll the window down, man. He said, please. He rolls it down. I said, listen, man, I am very sorry. That was a bad way to react to you. I apologize. And I did. I apologized to this cat, and he came back with same here.
Yeah.
And like I said, this is a big tatted up dude, man.
No doubt.
And that was the end of that, and I felt good about that, man. Some people may think, well, what are you being a pussy for? What are you talking about, man? You know, why am I going to start something for no reason other than some guy backing it, and I'm walking in behind his car, you know. So anytime we can chill shit out with people, it's a great thing to do, man.
I agree with that. And like I said, like with you, it cleanses you. You're not carrying that with you.
Right, man. And you feel better about yourself. You're like, hey, you know, I don't have to be this person. I can also be this person. So dude, I didn't want to be too Pollyanna, but I thought I'd bring that up.
Well, I'm glad you did, Phil.
Thank you.
Thank you for being honest with me.
I'm G. Gordon Liddy, and we'll be back with more How You Chill Shit Out in a moment.
You come back, and we'll talk about shooting DEA agents in the head, but make sure that you aim for the head. Yeah. Oh, that's what got
I felt bad about that, but I did it anyway.
Phil, thank you for honoring me with your time, man.
Dude, thanks for asking, man. I appreciate it very much.
I'm going to be pushing the documentary a lot as much as possible.
There's a link. Pat posted a link. Apple TV. You can purchase the doc if you'd like.
Yes.
Through Apple TV and other people, it is going to be debuting on the 15th. It's lots and lots of different streamers. And Amazon Prime will have it, and DirecTV. There's a bunch of them. We're very grateful for. I'm not the producer. I'm not the director. You know, I told the guys, I go, why am I going out and doing all this work? I'm not making any money on this. You guys are. You're going to be wealthy. You know, so no, but in all seriousness, I think actually Pat gave me gas money yesterday. So anyway,
well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. So yeah, no, it's, I'm very, very proud to be in it. I'm very proud that they asked, and we're grateful for the attention. So I think, the 15th, and it's available for purchase now.
And do you have any social media that you'd like to promote?
Yeah. PhilHenryShow.com is our website, but we're also at Facebook.com/ Phil Henry Fans, PHANS. That I have to spell that out, otherwise people are going to go. So that's, and then we're also on X, which is the real Phil Henry, Threads and all that crap. But the fun stuff is over on Facebook, Instagram, Phil Henry. In fact, I do a character on Instagram called I'm Warren Eckabee. It's just some old, broken down political correspondent who gives opinions like. And, you know, he's giving an opinion. Meantime, he's taking his glasses off. His hand's paralyzed. So that's kind of the comedy there. Just stuff like that. So, yeah, Instagram. And also, I'm trying to get a TikTok presence going, even though the last I heard, aren't they going to make TikTok illegal again?
I don't know. Yeah, but I went to your TikTok, and it's like they already dinged you because they don't. Nobody on that moderates understands satire at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Not at all.
So, I'm going to keep coming back with things and see what happens there.
Well, you know what you should do? Open baseball cards, because there's guys making – listen, there's a guy – I searched your name, and there was a guy holding a phone doing lip sync to Bobby Dooley, and that had hundreds and hundreds of likes. I'm like, what the hell?
Okay. Lip syncing a Bobby Dooley track for my show?
He's pretending to be Bobby Dooley talking on the phone. It's bizarre.
So wait a minute. He's lip syncing a recording, though.
Yes, he has it memorized to where he can lip sync it in tune with you doing Bobby Dooley.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I should come on and, I ought to link that guy and say, hi, I'm the real Bobby Dooley, and here she is.
You want me to send you the link?
Yeah, send me the link. Yeah. But you know what? What we do and what I've done over the years is such a unique thing and so challenging to people. I got a million people lifting it, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You can't avoid that, man. You're going to have people, running to a place where lightning just struck.
Yeah.
Out here.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Like radio. Hey, this worked in Minneapolis. Why don't we do it here?
Let's do it here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it here for sure.
Oh, God. I'll tell you real quick before I go. The last promotion before I got myself fired from this job so I could come to WSB. There was this new morning guy, and it was just right after gay marriage was legalized. And he goes, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get a couple of hot lesbos, and we're going to get them to get married. And we're going to do this whole thing. And I said, wait a minute. So gay marriage, you want to do this, right?
Yeah, man.
And our target demo is 35 and up. I said, you're not going to get them. I said, you're going to get old ladies that kind of like rock music that might do this, that are lesbians and want to get married.
No. We're going to get hot chicks.
And I said, well, how about this idea? You get two straight guys to get married. You put them in the house. We follow them for a year. We give them all sorts of crap. And they have to do the ritual and everything. And he goes,
no, that's too gay.
Yeah,
I said okay.
That's a real moron.
There, yeah, I'm like,
I mean, he takes the gay marriage thing and he's going to turn it into what, a Howard Stern bit? Two hot lesbians getting married.
Yeah,
man, you're that's kind of like running just some strip bar down on some seedy part of the boulevard. You're going to get customers, but no one's ever going to really remember your place, and it's going to burn to the ground in 2 years, and you'll run away with the insurance money. That's about it. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Come on, man. Rock and roll.
I'm so glad to be away.
Cats that talk that way don't really know rock and roll. Hey, you guys, rock and roll, right, man?
Yeah.
I've been into rock and roll since I was five, and I've never talked like that.
Except for when you're doing Comb Over Boy.
Well, that's a different story.
Yes.
When a guy goes on the radio and wants to be a unique talent and talks like this, like he just came out of the Columbia School of Broadcasting, what do you say?
Uh-huh.
What the hell, man? Talk, use the nose, man. Don't just plug it up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Phil, you're awesome.
I was in Utica, New York. They used to say, go to this place downtown, and this one cat, he cut it like this, Jown Chown. So we wrote on the label, the out cue, Chown, Jown Chown.
Jown Chown. Did you live in Utica?
Yeah, Utica. The guy's puking this thing out. Way back in the day when I was working at an oldie station in Utica, New York.
I'm from Elmira. Yeah. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I have, man. Yeah.
God, it's hard to get rid of that accent. Oh, God, Oh.
Well, my best friend is born and raised in California, but his parents came here from Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the kids were Don, Danny, Dorothy, and Denise.
Uh-huh.
But there was the problem with Don and Dan. So his mom would run through all the names and go, Don, are you talking to me, Mom, or Dan? Don. Is it Dan or Don? Dan. That was the big joke. So.
Oh my God,
Timmy, are you ready to get up? Do you want some? What do you want for breakfast, Timmy? Timmy.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Upstate.
Yes. Or my dad, Tuesday. Oh yeah. My dad. Do you know? You know that guy that you got the loan from in 1995?
Yeah.
He died yesterday. I sent you his obituary. Oh, thank you.
All right, man, I'm going to let you go because you're awesome, and I appreciate this time, and I can't wait for this to air this weekend. So,
thanks so much, brother. Appreciate you having me on.
And continued success, sir.
You too, Tim. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody in Atlanta. Love you.